Welcome to Unframed, a podcast which hosts talks and conversations about South African art and artists. I am your host, Anthea Pockroy. In today's episode, I am airing the third of four talks that I recorded at the Turbine Art Fair this year. The talks program was really interesting this year and was curated by Kifilwe Suwisa and Nomvoyu Horwitz. Thank you to them and to the Turbine Art Fair for allowing me to record these talks and to put them on Unframed. I think it's really important to take talks that are happening with small audiences and to put them online so that they are freely accessible. This panel discussion was of particular interest to me given the work I've done with Assemblage in the past. It was called Concerning Us on Collective Sustainability. It was a panel discussion with representatives from the art collectives Black Ink Contemporaries, Danger Gevaar Ngozi Studio, Free State Collective, and it was moderated by the curator Aisha Wadja. This panel will explore how artist collectives can be sustained and developed against a trend of their rapid dissolution. What is the value of collaboration, and can collectives withstand the fast-paced changes of the industry whilst maintaining their identities and ethos? Enjoy listening to this talk on collectives and sustainability.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the talk Concerning Us on Collective Sustainability. I'm Aisha Wadja. I'm moderating the talk this afternoon alongside Karen Bush, Kamohelo, and Chad. So I want this conversation to be quite kind of open and informal. So if you do have a comment, I think, you know, along the way, just kind of signal me and then maybe we can just include it. Because I think that this conversation really needs to be open and engaging with everyone. So are you guys happy with that? Okay, so just to give everyone a bit of background, I know there are some people here who do know me, but for those of you who don't, I've worked in art administration for the last 8 years actually now. I'm also an independent curator, and I've worked at the Bag Factory Artist Studios. I was at the Project Space until recently, and now at the moment I'm working for the Turbine Art Fair, which I've done before as well. So I have a little bit of knowledge about art organizations and institutions and collectives in that right as well. So I think I just would like for each of the other panelists to give a little bit of introduction to who they are. And because they all come from very different kind of backgrounds, and they're each servicing a very niche position within the art industry, which is very necessary. Karen used to work at a very established gallery, Gallery Momo, for I think as long as I can remember. but now she runs a really great collective out in Bloemfontein, which is very important. So maybe you can just speak to that a little bit, just kind of a little bit about what it's about, and then we'll get into the deeper questions afterwards.
Okay. I moved to Bloemfontein by some strange twist of fate at the beginning of 2017 after leaving Gallery Momo. And I actually, at that time, I was on sabbatical. I was exhausted from my Momo experience. So I wasn't planning to work in the arts again, but I kept on meeting artists in the Free State who over and over told me the same things during my sabbatical year, that they felt isolated, they felt disconnected from the rest of South Africa. They felt that Cape Town and Johannesburg dominates the art scene. And I started thinking, how can I best serve these artists? Because a lot of them are actually quite frightened to come to Johannesburg and engage with intimidating spaces, galleries, introduce themselves, etc. So immediately, I woke up the one day and I thought, we can start a collective. And the intention was to treat this in an organic process. And I started off by going to exhibitions. And I've just literally started it last year, the beginning of last year. And at the moment, we are sitting with 35 artists, the majority of which are from Bloemfontein. But I will slowly put out a call looking for artists, visiting small towns. And I promise you, there is talent. It's hidden and it's out there. And I really, really believe that that a collective like the Free State Art Collective model can be created in other provinces in South Africa. But more about that later.
Hello, everyone. My story is a bit the same to hers. I come from Watema in the East Rand. As you all know, the East Rand produced some of the best artists, you know. I just want to brag about it first. Especially Watema. We have Mashaba right there, so no, no. And you all know Brasem Tengetwa, the founder of Back Factory, Tanza Klava, the late Tanza Klava, you know, myself, Bambo Sbia. I can go on and on and on and on. But it's a very small township, you know. And I felt we had to work extra hard, you know. I started doing art at a very young age, in primary school. And we a bit far from Joburg, right? So we can do art, but there's no support, you know, because most of the artists, when they make it, they come to Joburg, you know, and the young guys, you know, are left back at home, you know, having to, you know, to find ways to make it big. And it's not easy because you don't have Artist Pro Studio, you don't have Back Factory, you know. So me and a friend of mine, Bambo Sibia, Thabo Sikwaila, who is a curator at Springside Gallery, we came together and we thought, you know what, let's just start a collective, you know, let's raise money, you know, we'll pay from our own pocket and take that risk and apply it to Tabernat Fair. And we applied and they loved our story, you know. I think they loved our story more than us, you know, because they have never seen our art before. So we wrote something beautiful, you know, and it spoke to them and they gave us the opportunity. And yeah, we came in, and the main aim for the movement was to get those young guys, those young girls in the East Rand who had never been exposed, you know, and bring them to Joburg, you know, and not just art fairs, but create pop-up exhibitions, you know. And so far, yeah, it has been good. So that's the story, my story in a nutshell.
I'm Chad Cudero. One third of Danger Gevaring was his studio. I live in Edenville still, so I'm with you, man. So DGI started as a collaborative practice between myself and Nathaniel Shepherd, which was all the way through our undergrad degree. It was us fighting with Vits and fighting with lecturers to mark collaborative work, purely collaborative work, and like unwavering collaborative work. So it was an entire degree of not necessarily collective practice, but really, really intense collaborative practice. In our fourth year, we were offered the opportunity by Gabi Globo to take part in an exhibition called The Labor of Love, which happened at Weltkulturen Museum in Frankfurt. And that experience, that year-long research project, was really important moment for the beginnings of what DGI Studio would be. Speaking to Pradavid Kolwane, Mambongi Klomo Mautla, Sam Tlengetwa, Vincent Boloi, Charles Nkosi. So all of these intergenerational discussions that were extremely important for myself and Nathaniel's printmaking practice, situated in Johannesburg and in South Africa, where those methods of producing prints but also disseminating prints and thinking about the agency of self-publishing through print-based medium but also written media, sound, what does self-organization, collective publishing and self-publishing mean in a space like this, and how does it translate from practices of older generations that we're in constant dialogue with to now? Because these things are still extremely important, and there are really open and beautiful ways of not only creating information, but also disseminating information. And the print shop is a site for knowledge that became very important to us. So when we got back from Frankfurt, we were offered the opportunity to open up a space with Sibongise Nikulu, and myself, Nathaniel Shepherd, and Sibongise Nikulu started a small print shop that was originally in Maboneng, which later moved to Victoria Yards, where we are now. So DGI is basically a space not only for collaborative and collective practices, but also a space that is a response to very kind of tight, formalized constructions of what print workshops should be in especially in South Africa. So a lot of the big print workshops that we have function in exactly the same ways with the same formats in terms of inviting artists, economic structures, how money is shared, how skills are shared, the difference between, or the hierarchy of conceptual and physical labor, the ability for a printmaker to speak or write intellectually or use print as a medium for research. So DJI was a space that was a response to that, but also questioned every aspect of how a print shop could be run differently in the space. So it's an open collective and collaborative space for experimental projects based around print, which extends to sound, installation, photography, etc.
Okay, so on that, I have a question that myself and Kaveh have been wanting to actually engage with you on, because we know that you also print with David Krut. So, slightly problematic question. But I think it's...
Amazing question.
But it's really important, and it's very interesting because, you know, you work, you know, during the day, your day job is working at this really established kind of print studio that has its very kind of, in a way, formalized sets of rules and kind of regulations for the printers who work there, but then also for the artists who print with those spaces. And I was speaking to an artist yesterday who, you know, has concerns about printing with one of those kinds of spaces because their practice, you know, extends beyond that. So, how do you kind of find that balance, and how do you navigate that space? I mean, what does it mean for you?
This is great. Let's try to push this as far as we can. So let's throw all trepidations out the window, and we all trust it.
Safe space. It's very safe.
David Krut is a cool space. I've been working there on and off as a printer for 7 years. So, from the end of my first year undergrad all the way up till now, where I'm doing an MA at Wits and also teaching students. I have my own second years that myself and Nathaniel teach collaboratively. And it's an important space, but I don't think it's an accessible space for everyone. And neither is DJI necessarily, but I think when that way of functioning becomes the only way that you can make prints in a space, it becomes seriously problematic, and there's things that need to happen that fundamentally shift the way we think about spaces that are made to produce and replicate knowledge. These are vital, it's a very, very important things, and there's a lot at stake, and there's a lot of responsibility, I think, when you have, number one, access to space like that, access to skills and resources, and to shut that space off is a complete disservice not only to the history of print, but also to a lot of the artists that we have the honor to still be with us today, who used print as a way to fundamentally change socio-political situations in the country. That's an intensely powerful thing. So David Krut is great in terms of technical skill. A lot of the really technical projects that I've worked on have come out of that space. William Kentridge's big woodcuts, a lot of Deborah Bell's really complex etching projects, and that's fantastic. They do what they do. But at the same time, how can I kind of bootleg everything that I've learned there into other spaces and engage with other artists that wouldn't want to print there for very, very good reason, to be honest. Like, it's not a comfortable or safe space in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but I think what you said about access is very important, because collectives, you know, are formed because of lack of access, or and, you know, as much as the industry grows, access is always kind of lacking in some kind of way. And artists, you know, they want to access spaces in different ways, or access different kinds of spaces. And that's why collectives need to be formed. Perhaps we could probably also look into just the kind of, because collectives work on different models. I mean, DGI is a very specific kind of printmaking kind of model, but then, you know, I think Free State Art Collective and Black Ink work in very different kind of ways and work across many different ways. So I think maybe, Karen, you can speak a little bit about that.
And Just continuing with what you were saying, Chad, is that for me, it was very, very vital that, you know, and I apologize to anybody that's from the Free State, but the Free State is definitely divided. It is decades behind in the divisions between the people there. And for me, the collective is very much about kind of just creating spaces for people just like you have with your collective. And I'd like to invite you to come to Bloemfontein, please, and do the kind of work. So for me, it was also very important to, in the development work that we can do in response to creating a collective like this, is 2 months ago, I invited Mary Sabanda and Lawrence Lemawana to come to the city of Bloemfontein. I managed to convince the 3 art schools to send their students to the lectures, and then students were chosen from the 3 art school spaces to attend workshops with Mary and Lawrence. But it was very, very important for me that this the space where the lectures and the workshops happened did not happen in any specific territory where people could put place ownership on. So I completely subverted it by taking it into a dilapidated building in the center of Bloemfontein. I was told nobody's going to come. And I was like, well, exactly who is this nobody that you are talking about? So, and I'm telling you, it was packed. So it's very important that people like Chad's collective and you know, because constantly white artists are being invited to Bloemfontein, and that creates a very, very specific language in the art making. So we need to change that. And the collective immediately can respond to that. You've immediately got, we've got 35 people that can immediately respond to anybody coming into the city, and then we can open it up to further people. So space is very, very, very important in this conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, with me, I totally agree. I think collectives are there to cause disruption. You know, because most of the spaces that you find around, they have so many rules, and they're not even run by artists, you know, like corporate people doing their corporate ways, you know. And it kind of somehow, you know, distract us from creating the way we want to create, you know, because, you know, they'll set a bar, and you guys can't go over that bar. If you go over it, they're never going to support you, you know. So we come in to say, you know what? Art can be so many things, you know, and we bring those people and we explore and we play and we have fun while we're doing it, you know, and we're breaking every rule, you know, that's what art is all about. And we ask new questions, you know, that's what you wanted to do, you know, and yeah, because outcome up, like for instance, we decided this year that I'm going to have my own solo show. Right. Mm-hmm. And I created different pieces using different styles. You know, if it was, you know, those galleries with their rules, they'll complain. You know, they'll talk about maybe I don't have an identity, you know, but because it's us, we manage the whole thing. You know, I was allowed and I did that. And that was the message I wanted to communicate, you know, and I feel that's why the collectives are important. Yeah.
So creating a space where you set the rules, which is what we need. Chad?
I think not necessarily thinking about these collectives or spaces necessarily as developmental projects, because I for us, like that kind of falls short a little bit in terms of what we can loot from these spaces that we're already engaged with. So the fact that we could open up, at some point, 3/3 of DJI worked at David Crute carving Williams woodblocks. But the fact that we've run, you know how these spaces think about it, a space that's in direct competition with the print shop and still worked there for the past 3 years is something that I think is quite beautiful. I have a key to David Crute. I have a key to the Center for the Less Good Idea. Like those are really, for us, like for me, really important moments of resistance in in what you're taking and where those resources get refigured and what they add up to in a different place in a completely different configuration. And it's not that we claim to solve any issues, but we just have a way of doing things differently. You know, we're completely open, and we've had this discussion many, many times where people have challenged us, and it's beautiful. Like, being challenged is an amazing point of growth and discussion and a site for response where I think knowledge begins to be produced. But, you know, we have to be completely open about the fact that the space was opened for three bras, like three men that want to make prints together and like chill out and bump hip hop. And like, it's open to whoever feels comfortable in that space. And we're going to keep that space running however we can for as long as we can. But it is that. For us to claim that it's a developmental project that's completely open and transparent and woke in some way is always going to be wrong. There are people that feel super, super comfortable functioning in that space and working with us, and there are those that don't. And that doesn't mean they're welcome any less. That just means that, you know, there's things to discuss and figure out along the way.
So then, talking about kind of, you know, sustainability, how is a space like DJI kind of, well, not kept sustainable, because I think it's still, that's an ongoing process, and those kind of things I think we're all going to figure out as we go. But like, how is it funded, and what are the business models behind it to keep it sustainable or to make it sustainable?
I mean, so collective and collaborative practice, I in my head try to distinguish between like collective practices working on your own kind of concerns as a unit. So like Wu-Tang Clan, as an example, is collective practice. Everyone does their own thing under the umbrella of this thing together. And collaborative practice is working on the same project at the same time. So both of those things are not sustainable at all. Like, to be super honest, I think Gabi has this really important talk that where she puts a 3-year cap on like institutionalized collectives, which obviously isn't the case for everyone, but it is incredibly difficult on an emotional, spiritual, practical, business, logistical level to pay taxes, make work, and run a space with someone that's your best friend. Like, you know, or two guys that are your best friends. You know, everything that could be going wrong, every response, every piece of body language all the time. And it's intense, but like, our collective ideology is to not revert to the things, to the formulas that we have learned from these other spaces, whether it's David Crutt, Artist Proof, or even commercial gallery spaces. So at the moment, the studio started with a funder who, when we got back from Germany, said to us, I have extra money laying around. Do you guys want to... Yeah. Do you guys want to buy presses and all the stuff that you need so you have agency over the production process? So if we can't pay rent at some point, we own the entire production process that can be moved into my garage, into Nat's house, into anywhere. And we can still continue to produce prints. So that was an important decision. And as it is now, we've been getting more projects and paying rent. Like, rent is up to us and we manage somehow. But for a long time, it was all the money that myself, Nathaniel, and Sponseni make outside of our jobs goes directly back into the studio. So all the work that we sell, panel discussions, projects, artist fees, all of that goes in. And then what subsidizes materials and rents are big collaborative artist projects, which is an individual discussion. So instead of blanket printers' fees for collaborative and editioning printing, it's an individual discussion. So either we keep the edition and sell them and get the artist will get 70%, we'll get 30%. Or if they have their collectors, they pay straight up studio fees and for our labor, time, materials, and then they take their editions. So the publishing, printing, and kind of negotiation in our labor, the materials, and the plates that they want to produce is an individual discussion for artist to artist, dependent on, you know, how they feel comfortable engaging with the studio. And it takes more time, but I think those 2-3 days a week, 3 weeks a month is worth having that discussion so that artists actually feel comfortable printing in a space. So that's one of the things that we try to keep the space running.
I think it's a really important way to work, to base it on an individual thing, because artists work very differently, and each artist, and I think, you know, each kind of project has its own needs and requirements. So, yeah.
When it comes to the Freeside Art Collective, I mean, it is an unusual concept in that it's not actually the artists that are running. It's actually me that is logistically managing the entire process. And I try to keep everything is voted on. Everything is kept as inclusive as possible. And I do realize that at some point I do have to set up a board that is going to make decisions that will you know, as we grow, and this is something that I have to do next year. But it has been entirely self-funded. It has. I also think that it's incredibly difficult to approach banks or as a collective, because we've got nothing to prove that the collective is actually a functioning entity, that the artists will produce the works, that we don't have the spaces. I mean, and I don't need a space to run the collective. I can easily do it from home. But I spend so much of my time writing proposals that actually takes my time away from spending, you know, and talking to artists, talking about their work, talking about what we can do, where we can take the spaces. But I mean, I am meeting with the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Bloemfontein next week. So for me, that is a huge leap forward, because this is a city that only is interested in brying and beer and rugby. So, and yet we have this huge cultural impetus. I mean, Bloemfontein is actually an education center. We have hundreds of art students moving through Bloemfontein every single year. The Central University of Technology alone has 300 students every single year, and most of them leave. So the talented artists that could essentially make a name for themselves in the Free State come to the city, come to Johannesburg, and we keep losing talent. And very few people actually want to stay behind, even though they like the pace of life there, which I'm sure you all have imagination about. So that this is sustainability is a huge, huge question. It's expensive to come to the Turbine for people from, I mean, I need funding just for the packaging of artworks and transport alone. You know, this for me would be, you know, you need to raise rent. I need transport. And how can I approach the Stutterfords and the Art Logics to say, hey, you know, like, will you fund the Free State Art Collective? It's restrictive.
Do you take commission from sales, like, while you're
yes.
here? You do. Okay.
Yes. So the structure is that none of the artists pay membership at all. I'm not interested in that. I carry the cost for wherever we travel, and then we have a 60-40 split, which is pretty standard in galleries and what have you. 60% to the artist, and in that way, I hope to. But it's at the moment, it's all a wing and a prayer.
This is our sixth year at the Turbine Art Fair. We only missed the first one. It has been a journey. It has been the hardest journey by far. I think this one, 2019, is the first one where somebody actually funded us, you know. But for the first five, it was tough. It was tough. But this is what we do. We came together, we paid, just coffered equally. The money we made on the first one, nobody got paid. You know, even now, nobody gets paid. So we just save it for future projects. You know, we just hope that the projects we're going to do is going to make more money. So it has been tough. It has been tough. Even going out there, you know, we've been talking to the Irani government, you know, to assist. But, you know, black people don't love art. I'm talking to someone. There's someone I'm talking to right here.
Someone specific.
You know? Someone specific. Yeah. I won't mention his name, you know, but he inspires me because he's here, you know. He's here. So I really appreciate this guy. I think we're going to do great things with him. You know, we just need to show him, you know, and educate them, you know, let them know about the culture. Let them know that art is an investment. It's not just, you know, fun gigs that we do because we bought. There's actually money. I see Jewish people coming to Olga's house every day. They know the value, you know? Yeah, they know the value. And we go back to the other side, they kind of look at it as, but if you buy an art piece, you're buying it for your kids. You're not buying it for yourself. But that's a story for another day. So, yeah, it has been tough. It has been tough. I think we were learning every year. We were learning every year, you know. And if you are individuals, you know, because there were the three of us and we all have different visions, you know. I'm an artist, full-time artist. Bambos Bia is a full-time artist. Tabo Skwaela is a full-time curator. So after the fair, everybody goes back home and they rest. Sometimes they can rest for 3 months, you know, because maybe we don't have, I don't know how to put this, but yeah, it'll come back to me. But for me, I think it comes to commitment, you know. I think it's possible it can work, you know. It has been working for us, even though we were adding 60% commitment. We were able to make it work. You know, we'll have meeting every now and again. We'll have exhibition and collaborate with other galleries and raise money, you know. So, yeah, it's a beautiful chain. I think we made so many mistakes which were necessary for us to grow from. And one thing I've learned is people don't want to fund something they don't understand. If you're coming up with something new, something fresh, you know. And we are young, so we don't speak the same language with the old guys who have the billions and the millions, you know. So if you give them something different, they start questioning it. So I think we need to fail, we need to push, we need to keep working on it until we create something that they can see and be like, you know what, we can invest in that, you know. So that's the chain we're in, and I feel this year is a breakthrough, you know. In fact, last year was a breakthrough, you know. Last year was a breakthrough, but yeah, I'll leave it at that for now.
I think that's in a very, that this is a very, very important point. In terms of DGI, it's funny, I mentioned Funder and everyone's like, I'm sure like the A4 article came to mind. So before Asha writes another one. sorry. I think an important point also is that DJI was funded by Anasmia, and this is something that's extremely important to us, because Anas is a young colored lawyer who wanted to start an art collection, who wanted to start building a culture for young black art collectors with money who have the same kind of job titles that young Jewish people going to August House and going into Goodman Gallery and going to Stevenson Gallery have when they're looking for art for their houses or for their children or as gifts. So the funding comes from there, and I think that's a very, very important place in terms of the way work is shown at DGI, the way we hang out with people or clients when we're discussing these things. It's an open space in terms of us trying to build a collector base that doesn't have to engage with the Stevenson or Goodman or David Crutt or even Artist Proof or the August House clientele. It's not about ticking those boxes for us, because we're trying. Our work doesn't sell with these people anyway. So like, we're kind of loud and like a little bit abrasive, we've been told, but it's about the work finding homes with people that are really going to respect and understand not only the history where those things come from, but the seriousness and the earnestness with playfulness that it takes to be able to produce and disseminate ideology and knowledge that people in power don't necessarily always agree with, if I'm making sense.
You are. And you're causing disruptions, which is good. And I, you know, going back to that point about education, I think it's key to the sustainability of collectives and spaces, because, you know, you're not targeting the guys who go to August House all the time, or the guys who buy at the gallery all the time. And it's also about, you know, educating the people from our communities, because, you know, for a lot of us, myself included, the people in our communities don't understand art. And it was something that was taken away from them in many ways, which has always been a part of all of our cultures. So it's about re-educating ourselves around these things and then relearning again what it is to have art and culture in our lives. And those are the people that we also need to bring into the space and to educate them and, you know, take them on the journey with us. And that's, for me, that's key to creating a sustainable, you know, collective organization or whatever it may be. Yeah. Yeah. Questions? Comments? Anyone?
Okay. Not all at once.
Hi, thank you so much for the conversations. I come in as definitely not in the art industry. I run a yoga and meditation studio in Greenside, and we're invited to do a meditation session here.
It's mixed, by the way.
But what we're doing is we have a space in Greenside where we have a yoga studio, we're doing a zero waste store, we have a vegan cafe, so we're all about sustainability. And we have a lot of clients who are artists, and they are suggesting, one of them is actually doing tomorrow at Brooklyn. We're suggesting that our backspace, which is set up just coincidentally really good for a gallery, and I just wanna, is there space for art in these other, because we're, especially in a millennial movement, I guess, where everyone's sort of networking, and art has always been quite an offshoot of a private, exclusive sort of practice. And is there space for us to collaborate in this? Is the environment right? I would like to get your opinions on that, for that kind of partnership and collaboration. Plus, we don't have capital, so we just have space.
Should we take a few more questions?
Sure,
and then
who's next?
I was just more interested in learning more about Black Ink in terms of, do you guys have a space that you work together? And do you do things outside of Turbine? What does your yearly program consist of?
Okay, can I just comment? Okay, I'm just going to answer her quickly. I think there is space, and it really is about creating space. Because space for new kinds of approaches is always needed. So even, you know, and yeah, so it's about creating space and creating partnerships. So if you have space, then create a partnership or open up ways for partnerships to happen. And that will also bring it, that will educate people more about art, but then it will also bring more people into your space. Yes.
I also think it's important to think through, well, from my printmaking background at least, it's important for us to always think through how these things have always existed. So art, or the art industry, is an elite thing because certain powers that be want us to think about it like that. But there were, for a long time, there were silkscreen studios on street corners printing political posters, or there were risograph, there was a kind of illegal silkscreen shop in the basement of Vitz during the 70s and 80s making posters, but these were very much artworks. I've spoken to a lot of older generation people that don't necessarily think they can engage with gallery spaces and artworks. And when you speak about these posters and these really important images, they're like, no, but those aren't artworks. And you're like, yeah, they definitely are. So pooling resources together, I mean, having space is huge capital. It's huge capital to have. And having people on board that are willing to trust you and that you trust, you know, I think to break the notion of art as an inaccessible space is important discussion to have, because it shouldn't, and it never did, in essence, function like that here, especially here. You know, there were really, the point of printmaking, especially in the context of this country, was to have it as open and accessible and as freely engaged with as possible, because that's how you disseminate information to people. You know, have people reading images the way they want to instead of the way it's written in the brochure. Those moments become very, very important. So I think it's great, and you should definitely turn it into a gallery space.
I just want to add to what Chad was saying. I mean, don't think of that space as what you imagine a gallery should be like. I mean, you can bring in video art. We are living in such exciting times. You can bring in performance art. Everything is becoming interdisciplinary. There's no right way that art should be presented. Yes, the Turbine Art Fair is in this format, but it doesn't mean that that's what you have to do in that space. And I would strongly urge you to, there are so many collectives and interesting, edgy people that you can work with, that you can do surprising things in that space. So I urge you to be experimental, especially since you are talking about current issues and millennial issues. Go for it. Collaboration is honestly the only way for us to move forward. Yeah. Do you
want
to add to that?
Yeah. I don't know if I should answer that first. But yeah, I think they said it mouthful. Back to Black Ink. So we once had a space, since, you know, the project started in the East Rand. So we use Springside Gallery as our base, you know. But most of us moved to Joburg. I came to Ora's house, Bambo came to Ora's house. That kind of separated us. Tabo was left that side, you know. So we had issues throughout the year, you know. And I feel we were slow in fixing those issues, you know, because I think there was fear at the same time, you know. So we had money and we thought, you know, if we pay for a space, you know, it's a challenge, you know, and most of the guys were not willing, you know, to take that risk. And it only happened recently where we were sitting with Nicholas Slobo, right, who's a good friend of ours. So we go to Nicholas Slobo, we give him the proposal, we want him to be part of the movement and fund, obviously, because he has a lot of money. You know, we are opportunists that way. So yeah, so while we were chilling there, and it's something I wanted to mention earlier, you know, we didn't have anything to be accountable to. That's why it took us longer to grow, you know. So while we were sitting with him, he was like, "Do you guys have a space?" You know, initially we didn't want to. Do you want to have a space anymore? We just wanted to be mobile. We wanted to do pop-ups, you know. We felt that was a better way, you know. And he was like, "The reason you guys are where you are is because you don't have a space, you know. So if he goes and he goes, you don't have anything to worry about. You don't have a rent to pay, you know. But if you can have a space, you can start fundraising, can do so many things, you know. So that only happened recently, and we, like, as we speak, we're looking for a space for Black Ink, you know. So it's gonna happen soon. Activities. We had so many activities. We had talks. We had. See, the thing is, we use people's venues. We don't use our venue, you know. But we're bad with social media. I think it's because we're all three artists, you know. We're bad with social media, so we're looking at bringing people in that will focus specifically on those things. We did it, and we did it so wrong, you know. We did it so wrong, and I admit. You know, I'm glad we're still alive, we still exist, you know. Yeah, I don't know how we survived, but we did, you know, and I'm grateful for that, you know. But yeah, now we're learning from those mistakes, you know, and I feel that's the only way to grow.
Should we take the next question?
Yes.
I think you were first.
Yes.
Okay. I think now it's more of a comment than a question. On collective sustainability. Also, we need to look at getting the right people for the right spaces. I mean, for instance, you're two artists and a curator, but you're not entrepreneurs per se. You know, you're not administrators per se. And that's why you had the mistakes that you, you know, had, not having social media presence and also, you know, tracking your progress. So I think also we, you know, as artists, we can get into the trap of just wanting to chill with our own because we are a community. But then some of the skills that we need are not with us. And the galleries used to play that role, but now our friends are supposed to play that role, the accountants, the lawyers, and so forth. They are supposed to come into the art space. We need to open the doors for them and make them feel welcomed so that they can start working with us and help us run these initiatives that we want to do.
And he's the first one that we recruited.
Chad, I think you alluded to this when in your opening remarks, and I just wanted to pose it to all three of you. Can you speak to us about the politics and the challenges of collectives and how that speaks towards its sustainability? I mean, both of you are in collectives made up of friends, and there are human dynamics that come into play. Some of our favorite music groups don't exist today because, you know,
yeah.
So can you speak to us about how you guys are looking at that and countering that so that Black Ink still exists 50 years from now, so that DGI is still around in 30 years?
just to add to that, I think I've started an organization, Assemblage, and we've been going for about 9 years. But founders fatigue is a real thing. And I think to add to that, like how are we going to see Black Ink still going in 50 years is to acknowledge that you probably won't be running it in 50 years. And how do you create a legacy for your collective, for your organization? And it's about bringing people in. But it's very challenging to find the right people who are as passionate about your founding project. So I think it's about really bringing people in and fostering passion within other people that are capable of like continuing the project in 50 years. So start thinking about it now.
I agree. Before I forget, I was there when you started Assemblage, by the way. The first time, before you guys had a building, I was with this guy, Mashaba. Yeah, but I went back and he stayed.
Okay, very good question. I'm fully aware that I'm a middle-aged white woman and that this does create enormous politics. However, I'm enormously passionate and I'm a logistical person. I'm managing. And that's why the Free State Art Collective functions, which is, you know, what they are struggling to find. So I handle the marketing, the website. I literally am doing everything. So, but I've already started saying to the collective, I cannot do this for more than 10 years. I do not want to do this beyond 60. And honestly, and I'm just trying to instill the same kind of passion and say to people, you know, there is space for curators. There is space. You don't have to necessarily focus on being that visual artist. We need producers. We need curators. We need people to step into the role so that legacies are left behind. Because I find it exceptionally sad that so many collectives are dying. And there've been wonderful collectives in the past in South Africa, which just disappear mysteriously. And why? Why? Why is this happening? When actually it should be the young Black students and academics that should be stepping into these roles and taking over. Why is this not happening?
Well, so there's that. But also I think that, you know, in thinking about organizations, it's in setting up the organization from the beginning to make sure that you have people who are willing to carry it through and the right people who want to carry it through. I think what happens, you know, because artists are artists and we don't think about business and we're just like, ah, it's business, it's fine, we'll survive. But you have to, you know, it's why the accountants being part of the board is important. It's why the lawyer being part of the board is important. Or if it's not a board, but just being on the team in some way and adding some kind of guidance and consultation, because that is what helps think it through as a business. And it's what helps keep that organization or collective or anything actually just going. So I think from the beginning, it has to have these kind of set kind of structures. Yes. And that's important. And it, you know, especially when it's friends, you know, there has to be clear structures and clear boundaries in a way. Well, actually not in a way, completely.
I think that, you know, without sounding too extreme, it's like, it's a constant fight with an understanding that, like, to some extent, this is a really important relationship in your life. And we, the three of us, always talk that if DGI falls apart, the thing we're going to leave with is us three. Like, friendship's way more important than whatever is happening there. And whatever's happening there is vital. It's super important. But I'm not going to lose my homies. I'm not going to lose my best friends over some shit like that, right? Again, it sounds silly, but I think these things are also vitally important. DGI has been running for a bit more than 3 years now by us, by artists who have lecturing positions. I'm doing an MA, who have other relationships, who have family things, who have jobs. And, you know, the three of us as artists, like silly artists, are more than capable of doing taxes, of doing social media stuff, not the best, responding to emails, making, you know, catalogs, crunching the numbers, seeing how late rent is and what projects can cover what part and if we need lino and sending invoices and all of this other stuff. And it's shit. We don't enjoy doing it. It sucks, but it has to be done. Because no one else is going to do it. You know, doing things the way we want to do them might not always make sense to the accountant or the lawyer or the guy that's giving you money. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? But it's that constant negotiation and renegotiation and, you know, Nat can't send the invoices because he's like, yo, I have home things that I'm doing. Can you hook this up? I'm like, sure, I'll do it, you know, it's your turn, but I'll do it. Or I'm like, dude, I got to work. I can't go to this meeting. Go represent DGI. And it's that negotiation and love between friends that makes it important. The willingness to compromise, not to compromise on projects, but the understanding that the friendship is more important than the project sometimes, or that the project can be handled and you can still foster a really important relationship that you have with your homies. Because at the end of the day, those are the only two people that are going to be cranking out silk screens with me at 4 o'clock in the morning after we've been awake for 48 hours. No one else is going to be there. And I think it doesn't get spoken about enough, but looking after ourselves and looking after each other is incredibly important. And I think that's why a lot of collectives die out so quickly, is because, you know, workloads become uneven. People aren't willing to pick up the slack because, like, are there any children here? Because, like, fuck that person. You know, he didn't pick up the slack last time, so why should I now? Like, they're just being lazy when, you know, shit's going on at home, or they have health issues, or there's something that they're not in a good space. You need to have people to lean on, and, you know, you need to be there for people to lean on you. And I think that is what fosters good, strong collective practice over an extended period of time. I mean, I guess we'll find out, but those things are really, really important. There's, I have a very pessimistic view on these things, but I feel like there's very few people that I really, really trust, and those that I do incredibly, and like with all that I have, like, I'll give anything for the people that I can lean on. And I think it's emotional silliness, but it's super, super important for us, at least.
We've got like 2 minutes left, and I see that there's a comment there with Nicole.
Can I mention the question about, I think you spoke about, I'm trying to remember, the politics. Yeah. I'll tell you something, and this is going to be controversial. So whatever I say right now stays here. Oh, no, it's cool. I can live with it, you know. I think the biggest culprit here most of the time is the artists. I'll tell you why. The culture is changing, and it's changing because of money, right? I've been at August House for a really long time. So if a gallery represents you and you're well off and you're doing good, if I create something that will bring everybody together, you know, I'll make you an example. You once did Young Art Virtuoso, you know, one of our programs, with that guy in Sikelelo Mzimbombo, right? It was a beautiful thing. So why don't you bring artists in one space? Why don't you paint together? You know, those kind of movements. Because I don't think art should be all about you painting in your own studio, you know, or us going out and drinking together, you know. It can be, it is important, yeah, you know. But it can be us painting together, you know, and inviting people and creating movements and doing, as I said when I started, disruption, you know, and we perform and we do those things. Most of the artists are not into such if I'm not getting paid, you know. And most of the time when you do these things, you're not doing them because you want to pay people. No, we want to create a movement, you know. Disruption for me comes first. That's what art is all about. It's not just about beauty, but there's certain issues that we can communicate through whatever we can do together as a collective. You know what I mean? Imagine if everybody came together at August House, maybe once in 6 months, and we do a crazy gig, we close the streets, you know, and we perform. You know, that's what we need. That's what most of the artists are doing internationally. That's why art is big, you know. It's not just limited to a canvas or a piece of paper, you know. So, yeah.
Okay. So maybe just, Nicole, do you have a question or a comment?
I can make it a comment.
Oh, well, okay, last question / comment from Nicole.
Okay, so when you speak about sustainability, I automatically think about diversity because I feel like you can't have one without the other. And so my question is whether you are aware of that. Is it something that you want to bring into your practice? Because like Kamu, when you're thinking about the new space that you're opening up, are you considering maybe bringing in a girl who's in charge of something? And Chad, you guys, are you thinking about that as well in some capacity? It doesn't have to be practicing the way you are. And maybe especially for Karen, because in the position that you are and the CV that you have so much power that you could share with other people. Imagine bringing in a young girl of, you know, a different ethnic background, right? Yeah, that'd be amazing because wherever you go with your name and everything, and also for the people that you work with, there's bigger representation. So are you guys focused on that? And I think you should. So it's a question and a comment.
We are actually out of,
we can go.
We can go because there's, okay.
So I think you should ask some patriarchy first.
Okay.
I actually have a question for Nicole, but I'll ask
her later. So let me play devil's advocate for a second. So, you know, responding to that question in a way of saying, oh no, we definitely should and we plan on doing that is problematic in itself because then you're filling spots, right? In the same way, you know, me explaining to you who we've worked with is also problematic in its own way. But, and this is why I said quite carefully what I said at the earlier on, is that all of the people that are comfortable engaging with us in the space frequent that space, like extremely often. we've worked with many, many different people, some of which were women who are not comfortable in the space, others of which were women who were extremely comfortable in the space and still are, whether it's for making prints, hangout sessions, listening sessions, DJ sets, whatever, coming to smoke a J with us. Like, there's whoever wants to kick it with us and enjoy a drink, some food, some prints, and an occasional joint is completely more than welcome to engage with the space. And we have, in terms of like the formalized studio space, collaborated with many, many different people. The people that are comfortable generally come back and generally hang out, and generally very, very good friends of ours. People that don't, that's also cool. Like, we see them around, it's always hugs and kisses, and like, it's cool. But yeah, it's open as far as three guys who are best friends can open up the studio, if that makes sense. I mean, it's at the same time, it would be completely problematic to frame the space as anything other than what it is, right? Yeah. No one's excluded, let me put it ever excluded. People have been kicked out for being assholes and like getting drunk and being a bit too close with women in our space. We have been forcefully removed. But other than that, everyone's welcome in the space whenever they want to.
It's Nicole, right? Nicole, every single decision, every single project that the Freeset Art Collective is open, every door that opens for the Freeset Art Collective, I'm exceptionally aware of creating, the collective is mainly about creating opportunity. So every project that we work on, it gets divided collectively. So whoever comes in co-curating or who helps me, it's entirely run as a collective. So everybody comes in and gives their space. There's a big project that I've been invited to work on next year, and that I want to give to two Black women in the collective to work together with me with the intention of kind of saying, I will be in the background more in a consultative position and they will step forward and eventually, hopefully, take the baton forward as curators or producers. Yeah, so I'm very, very aware of this question that you've asked and I'm doing my best to develop the future. That's such a horrible word, development. Help me with a synonym. But you know, yes, to give the power, to share the power, to give it over so that eventually I can retire.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
We've got a flag in the front here. Just well, like my note.
Can I plug? I'm down. Thank you, guys. I'm going to invite you. We've got a platform. It's called Conversations Over Coffee and Art. We bring entrepreneurship and art together. It's at Starbucks at Melrose Arch, first Wednesday of the month. Every first Wednesday. Next month, we're doing Women's Month. We're doing Boomies, our guest artist. And then we've got another entrepreneur lady from the JMB Hive. Thank you, guys. Thank you for the plug.
Nice one, dude.
Okay. No more questions?
Just a comment. I'm not an artist.
Awesome.
But I've been working in organizational life for 20 years. And it seems to me the quest for legacy becomes an end in itself sometimes. It's not really important. Because organizations are merely platforms for you to express yourselves. And so sometimes they'll exist for 18 months. And sometimes for 50 years. The point is they're impermanent. And so if you don't get too hooked on the platform, the medium, the ability to express yourself then, because what happens is when it disorganizes, when it breaks down into chaos, people take a part of that institution, set of values, the creativity, they take it with them. And so in a sense, being fixated on the mode of organization can be a little bit arrogant. And seeing yourself as an owner of, you know, the collective, it's not about you. It's about the ability to bring people together at a particular point in time. And you know what? 3 years down the line, that platform doesn't serve the people that it brought together, and they'll go off and do their own thing, and that's entirely okay.
Yes.
But guys, you guys are doing phenomenal.
Thanks for
work.
That. Really? That's a good.
I'm going to hand it to the moderator, who's going to wrap us up. I'm sorry.
Thank you. That was actually a really great comment. I could add more comments, but then we'll be here the whole day. Thank you guys for coming to this talk, for being at the fair. Thank you to our wonderful talks program curators as well.
Thanks to our moderator. Thanks to you all, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much to the speakers on this panel, as well as to Turban Art Fair for allowing me to post this talk on Unframed. And thank you to all the listeners for being here today and listening to this engaging panel discussion. Don't forget to follow Unframed on Instagram and Facebook, and feel free to comment on the posts for each of these episodes. I would love to know your thoughts, what you thought of the episode. You can follow Unframed on iTunes and subscribe to the channel, and it will let you know when new episodes are out. And please leave a review if you are on iTunes. You can also listen to Unframed through the website www.unframedpodcast.com, and you will also be able to see some images from each episode. Thank you so much for being here today, and see you next time. Thanks. Bye.